This is the Lunch Bite with Ian Bass.
I have on the line a recipient of an International Literary Award from the British Association of Industrial Editors, a businesswoman with 30 years of experience guiding captains of industry and senior management in the public sector, guiding and assisting them with the preparation of CVs, business and professional profiles, speeches, and other documents. Well, Estelle Zawadzki, forgive the pun, but that is quite a CV. Welcome to the Lunch Bite. How are you, Estelle?
Good, thank you. Thank you, Ian, for inviting me, and I look forward to interacting with your listeners.
Fantastic. Thanks, Estelle. But let's be honest, besides that fantastic intro, and I must commend you, that's incredible. Deep down, you've always gravitated towards being a volunteer. You told me that you were a Bekkerholm volunteer at the age of 12. You've also volunteered to the South African Blood Transfusion Service. You spent 17 years giving of your time. And you also formed part of the Wednesday afternoon volunteer team that served tea and provided entertainment for the residents of Sandringham Gardens. And I'm glad I've got a cup of tea with me because I think this is going to be a fantastic conversation. But before we get into this and talk about what you're currently doing and specifically around the current period, Estelle, you're a CV writer, and what does this uncertainty mean for job seekers, and how important is it for everyone to get their CV updated?
It is a very uncertain time, and everybody's nervous. We're in a situation that we've never been in before, but things will return to some normality, and they may not go back to what they were. Your CV is a very important document to keep up to date. People are going to go back to their old jobs, but some are going to have to find new situations. You are CV writer, the CV, let's not say the CV writer. The person who owns the CV must just understand you are far more than you think you are. Now, that's not some famous philosopher, but that has been my observations in the last 35 years, writing CVs and business profiles, etc.
If I could ask you on that, and you mentioned that you've been doing this for the past 35 years, and and as you mentioned to me as well, I think you've scrapped something like 7,000 CVs. How has the CV changed, and how difficult is it for individuals to actually write a CV that is, on the one hand, it's respectful in the sense that you're not getting a big head, if I can call it that, but at the same time, you're making sure that you don't undersell yourself. What would you give to listeners as guidance in terms of being kind of optimistic and being very positive about your skills, but not coming across as arrogant?
Ian, the CV needs to sell the individual in a positive light. The document's got to be brief but comprehensive. But the way it is constructed, you've got to let the person that you're appealing to know who you are quickly. And you've got to focus on what you have to offer. You've got to focus on the positive. Don't dwell on the negative. Now, if, for example, you were Marketing Man of the Year, or you got some award, don't tuck it in under page 5. Let the reader know immediately. If you see the way I introduced myself to you, I told you that I won an international award for literature, for writing. I didn't put it at the end. I had your attention immediately. If one doesn't grab the reader's attention in the first two lines, and this applies to anything that is the written word, you're just going to lose their attention. So your achievement, put them up front. Don't worry about getting a big head about nothing. It's your achievement. It's your personal achievement. Put it up front. Just attract the reader's attention for a start. And then you can go on about who you are, who, what, where, when, and where to. But the first two lines are critical to get the reader's attention.
Fantastic, Estelle. I think the most important things I took out of that is definitely about being proud and being positive. So that's definitely good information and good guidelines for our listeners to take. Delighted to be joined on the line, continuing our discussion with Estelle. Estelle, tell me a little bit about this incredible community that you've become involved in. You call yourself an off-site member of the San Andreas Garden Shul. Explain to me a little bit more. What is an off-site member? And tell us about this San Andreas Garden Shul community.
An off-site member is, for me, somebody who doesn't live at Sandringham Gardens or at Golden Acres. In fact, that doesn't live on the campus of the Sandringham Gardens. I came to that shul about 20 months ago, and I have seen how the off-site members, as I've called them, the number of off-site members are growing. Mm. And there's only one reason, and that is because we love the atmosphere at that shul. There is, it's like no other shul I've ever been to. Everybody cares for the next person. It's just beautiful to be there. You have gaboyim that there's no committee, but there are gaboyim of their own choice. They, mm-hmm. It's just so beautiful to see the caring. You will have somebody who is being wheeled in or wheeled out by a resident of Sandringham Gardens who himself is not very strong and doesn't see so well. There is this incredible rabbi. Yes, I know. I'm always praising the rabbi. He is incredible. It's the amount of effort that he puts into making the service so special. We have Arnold Garber. When Arnold Garber walks into the shul, you know, we're supposed to be a light unto the nation. Arnold is a light unto the shul. Everything just becomes so happy. We have Jeff Allen, who is another offsite member. He's a Kohen with so much soul. And Jeff can go from really being so sincere in his tefillot to singing Johnny Cochran at the Brooker.
That is a talented community you've got. So Estelle, tell me, the essence of what you're telling me is that this is really about a community of getting together and socializing, and no doubt, as an off-site member, this time now has been very challenging for you. What have you done to maintain that? And I'm going to give a little bit of a hint because I'm very fortunate that I get your newsletter. So I'm going to ask you to tell us a bit about the newsletters. But before I do that, I opened up one of the last newsletters and I was like, I wouldn't say I was surprised, but I was a little bit, taken back when I read here in the newsletter that our Kabbalat Shabbat and social Zoom meetings. Now, Zoom meetings? Tell us a little bit more about that, Estelle.
Zoom meetings. That was one of Arnold's initiatives. We want to stay connected. For right. us, we were told about 2 weeks before the official lockdown that we cannot come into the shul anymore. We can't come onto the Sandringham Gardens complex. This is the off-site people. The shul was closed. And for me, I was devastated. I was devastated, not thinking I can't come back here next Shabbos. When will I be allowed back? And I found that everybody else was feeling the same way. How are we going to stay connected? Because you can lose out so quickly. People have other interests. The first thing I thought of, I'm going to come to the Zoom now, was the newsletter has got to continue. The newsletter was started by Dr. Jonathan Mach, 31 weeks ago. Wow. It started as one pager, and he's another of our off-site members. And I said to him, I want to continue with this. And he said, Estelle, it's going to be difficult. I said, I know, but I'm going to try. I've got material. I'm going to try. So I continued with the newsletter. The rabbi helps to print. The people at Sandringham Gardens help to print and distribute. Golden Acres Security distribute. And so we've continued with the newsletter. Mm-hmm. The Zoom, as I said, was Arnold's initiative. And I myself thought, oh no, who is going to Zoom in? These people, they've all got landlines. Well, I was wrong, because the people at Sandringham Gardens at Golden Acres mostly have what do they call them? Smartphones.
Smartphones, yeah.
But you know, when one is, the older one gets, Ian, the more you resist change and the more you find technology frightening. And so I thought, no, these people are losing out. It's so easy. When I found out how to Zoom, it's so easy. Let's make it easy for them. Right. So first we had the Kabbalat Shabbat at 4:30 in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And then we found that if we could get the Sandringham Gardens and Golden Acres people to come on board, this would be great. So I called on a gentleman at Golden Acres called Clive Bagg, who is a computer fundi. He helps the people with fixing their computers. And I said, Clive, will you help us get the people connected on Zoom? And he said, sure, be my pleasure. I've already done several. And then Janet Skickner, who is the general manager at Golden Acres, said she would help the people, as busy as they are, they really are all overloaded. She would help the people at Golden Acres that needed help to get onto Zoom. Well, this last Shabbat, we had, I think, about 23 people on board. There just seemed to be so many people, including the residents of Golden Acres, who can now comfortably come onto Zoom because they can't. 4 o'clock or 4:30 was too late for them. They've got to start getting going down to supper very early in the afternoon because of the lockdown situation where they are sitting two at a table. And it was just amazing to see how many people were actually interested in the Kabbalat Shabbat. And again, we had our favorites. We even had Saul Thompson, who's the CEO of the Chevra Group. He came and addressed us as well.
Tell us a little bit about the stories that you write for the newsletter and some of those memories that, or life journeys, I should say, that you're able to take from the residents within Golden Acres and Sandringham Gardens and to put to paper and share with everyone in the community.
Yeah. Ian, as I was saying before we lost the connection, I'm very aware of my target market. The people at Golden Acres, Sandringham Gardens, the people in the shul, they all have memories. We all have memories. I make sure that there's something that's Kodesh, the Pasha of the week, etc. But most of all, people want nostalgia's delicious. And I find that when we go back, and my articles are about something nostalgic, there's always a great reaction.
Yeah.
In the more recent one, the more recent newsletter, I wrote about Workers' Day. I tried to link the newsletter with an event. We had Lag BaOmer, we had Workers' Day, and then I spoke about the Arbiter Club, which was a socialist leaning club. The people were the workers. And I wrote about, and then I had to do research, and then I found that there was this lady in 1909, Clara Shovelson, who led a strike of 22,000 women in the United States. And so the research, I moved and moved and moved, and I found that there's an article of general interest like this linked to a calendar event. And then I try and do a profile on people who are living either at Golden Acres or Sandringham Gardens.
Right.
I recently wrote an article about a couple who passed away within 2 or 3 days of each other. They had met at Sandringham Gardens, and it was the most incredible romance. Everybody knew and admired this couple. And in the end, they died within a week of each other, with 2 or 3 days of each other. Of course, I couldn't speak to these people anymore. But then where I can't get hold of the people at Sandringham Gardens or Golden Acres, because, for instance, they can't hear me, I then try, in the case of this couple, I phoned the niece of the lady, Sharon Bilal, and Sharon told me about her aunt. And then somebody at Sandringham Gardens told me about Harry Israel, who was the gentleman in the story. It's the only way I can work because I am limited by frailties such as people not being able to hear me. So I try my own research. I get help from, but I get help from so many people.
Sure.
And in the end, it just comes together. And I'm very, sometimes I wonder myself, gee, how did you put this all together with not being on site, as it were? And that's what I do. For example, the 6 Day War. We are now Yom Yerushalayim. And I remember did your father told me about his experience of going to the going to Israel during the 6 Day War. And please God, they will be featured this week. So
that's amazing.
That's how we got connected.
Estelle, as we wrap up and as we conclude on this fascinating interview, and one of the points you mentioned, and I'd just like to quote it here, is I always ask my guests a little bit about themselves. And one of the most important things you said in the message you sent to me is that you believe in the old-fashioned courtesy of saying thank you. If somebody helps me, that's a privilege, not my right. So I want to thank you, first of all, for everything that you've done and for taking the time to speak to us today. I also love this point that you say some people collect art, you collect people. Tell me a little bit about what you've learned during this journey, because you have such a positive outlook on all the things that seem like doom and gloom. What personally has Estelle Zawadzki learned from this experience we're going through?
I've learned that people are kind. People are helpful. Trying to do this newsletter, which seems to be the focus of my life right now, I need help with technology. I'm at home in my home office. People are happy to help me. People who understand about putting in little pictures. I didn't understand the first time, but I was willing to learn. You never stop learning. More than anything else, I have found the cooperation and the kindness of everybody to help me get that CV, the CVs are on my mind, to get that newsletter out. I've also learned and this learning of new technology, and it's such a thrill to learn. When we come out of this, I will look back and say, what did I learn? And most of all, I learned to be disciplined. I'm up at 5:15 every morning doing what I need to do. I'm still giving out sandwiches at that hour of the morning.
Wow.
Get dressed and start working. Start focusing. Because it's so easy to become distracted. And it's so easy to have that, oh, I'll still do it tomorrow. Because we're going to be out of this lockdown in different levels, but we're going to be out of this lockdown sooner than we think. That's my prayer. And then you need to start living again, and you've got to live in the real world again, and we will live in a different, but the real world again. So be disciplined. That's what I say to the listeners.
That's an amazing way to end off a fantastic interview. Estelle, we're getting a lot of requests of how people can get hold of you, either to learn more about your stories or to get access to your newsletters. What is your email address that we can share with the listeners?
My email address is ezee@global.co.za.
Fantastic. Thanks, Estelle. We'll definitely post that on the website. Thank you so much again for the incredible work that you're doing, for the incredible stories you've told us and the incredible stories you continue to write. Keep up the great work. And may I ask you, and you don't have to answer this, Estelle, how old are you?
I'm 73 and 1 month today.
Fantastic. And you have embraced everything that's been put in front of you, and you've shown everyone that you've been able to shift your focus back to what you will gain instead of what other people will think. And you've found yourself doing more. And I think that's an incredible example and an inspiration for everyone. And take care, look after yourself, and I hope to catch up with you soon.
Thank you, Ian.